I don't know if you ever seen Narcos. Have you ever seen that scene where they go and go into the Supreme Court and they blow it up?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get rid of the evidence?
Yeah.
That was my mom's office.
No way.
So my mom was pregnant with me and she wasn't able to go to the office that day because I kept kicking her bladder.
Holy shit. So she saved your mom's life technically.
Technically, yes.
She owes you forever.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's like...
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for checking out the show. And if you like it, tell a friend. And if you want to support the show, you can by 1, subscribing and liking our YouTube channel at the DMW Podcast. 2, you can go to our website and sign up to our mailing list at thedmwpodcast.com. And 3, you can follow us on Instagram at the DMW Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support. My name is Steph, and this is the Dead Man Walking Podcast.
David? Thanks for being on the show, man.
It's a pleasure being here.
Well, it's funny because I only got to know you because of running.
Mm-hmm.
But you were one of the few people that throughout that whole journey when I was prepping for the marathon that I decided, yeah, I'm going to run this marathon. I remember every week I'd come into the store and you would tell me something new, give me a piece of advice because I literally knew nothing of what I was doing. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, these electrolytes here and these shoes are going to totally help me with this and that. So one, I just want to say thank you for all the help that you gave me and the advice and some funny stories too. And then second, I was like, holy shit, every time I did speak with you, you had a new thing happening. There was training of like 20, 30 hours a week, training for marathons, doing ultra marathons. You tell me these stories about 60K runs and running up the mountain 10 times. I'm like, what? This guy's a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
But I was always interested in knowing more about how this started and what and who hurt you, you know, to make you do this to yourself. So thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, no worries.
And I'm really looking forward to hearing some of the stories that made David who he is today.
Great. Great. What would you like to know?
Well, you know, we were talking just earlier, you know, when you first walked in, you're talking about Boston.
Right.
So that's something that you're training on right now.
Yeah.
And it's getting pretty crazy, the cutoff times and that stuff. So what's going on with Boston in the sense that it's changing cutoff times, which is already pretty intense at 3 hours?
I think it's because the quantity of runners has drastically increased over time. I mean, previously when I first started running, this would have been like 2010, 2009, when I was like probably coming into high school. Like it was that long ago. And it was like, it was a very small community of people that were kind of type A personalities, very like structured. The shoes were very minimalist. So you had to be very skinny. You had to recover really well. I remember like our recovery runs around grass, right? We didn't have high stack height shoes. So it's like we were doing 100, 120K miles even at that age, right?
Wow.
And, you know, with the introduction of Hokas or shoes like that are high stack height, a lot of people have come into... Like yourself, right? People that might be built a little bit differently or built bigger, and it's made the sport significantly more universal, which is fantastic to see. I think it dilutes kind of the sport a bit. I mean, it isn't based so much on performance anymore. It's more based on it's more of a social thing as opposed to before. It was like, what's your 5K time?
Yeah.
Like, what do you like within the small running community? We'd kind of, you know, have a hierarchy based on our running times as opposed to now that everybody's kind of just going in and be like, have you done a marathon? Yes, I've done a marathon. No one asks you your time.
Yeah.
It's just, that's it, right? Or have you done an Ironman? Even if you walked the marathon, you're still considered an Ironman as opposed to, I know in my high performance like activities, like you did an Ironman, but you bonked.
Yeah.
Like, get them next time. Like, you failed.
Well, it's funny because I remember you were telling me one time that you guys are doing even like blood tests and stuff in the middle of the training.
Yeah, we have lactate testing.
Know, I didn't do any of that. I get you know, like that. That's why when I would hear you, I would like, it made me realize there is a complete other level. Mm-hmm. You know, like everyone that I've known in general, when they say run, it's kind of like you're saying, it's more of a social vibe.
Yeah.
But when I would talk with you or even like David Joseph was another guy. You know.
Yeah.
And then I fucked around and I did like this funny video with him because he was a guest, I think, on like episode 10.
Okay.
And, you know, I challenged him to like a race or whatever, you know, like for fun or whatever. And he smoked me, like absolutely smoked me.
Yeah.
But he's an athlete. You know what I mean? And you realize in that moment, you're not an athlete. you run,
mm-hmm.
but that's like athlete status. And there's a huge difference when someone is committed on a daily, like you and David, you know, like every day there's a training. You're right. Going for like a 20 kilometer run after this in the snow.
Yeah.
I'm not going for a 20, you know what I'm saying? I'm not doing it, so.
But it almost becomes like our responsibility. It isn't a discipline. It isn't something that like it's hard for us to do because, I mean, I've been doing structured training for 6 years.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, there was a span of like, you know, 3-4 years or maybe even before that where I missed 3 workouts in that whole span period.
Wow.
Like I had no excuses. Like it was like.
Well, what was the mindset? Like, so what triggered 6 years ago? Is it based on even your previous trainings that has kind of structured that or did something happen?
Well, my dad was very like adamant on me being very disciplined as a kid. So he made my life very hard for me, right?
Like, what did he do?
Like, let's say we'd have a soccer field and it'd be completely packed. Like it'd be filled with snow, right? He's like, okay, you just got out of school. It's dark out because, you know, it gets dark at 5 p.m. I'd like you to pack down the snow on this whole field and we're not leaving until the whole field is packed down.
Okay.
So I'm wearing boots. I'm wearing this. I'm like maybe 14, 13 years old. My friends are having fun. I'm packing snow down on the thing. But that's just his mentality, right? Mm-hmm. He comes from, you know, like a small town in Colombia. Farmers, you know, is very fortunate. Hilarious story about my family is that they actually won the lottery in Colombia.
Get out of here.
Yeah, no, they won the lottery. So they came from like a very, you know, lack of education. My dad grew up in like a very where like the ground was mud. Holy like fuck. like that kind of like the place that he lived no longer exists because it was demolished. So him having that mentality and then coming into money later on and then, you know, being formally educated later on, he still had that mentality.
He kept it
and he kind of tried to instill it in me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you live in a first world country like here and you have a lot of your needs met,
mm-hmm.
but you lose that hunger.
Yeah.
And I think my dad really put that in my head.
Were you born here or were you born there?
I was born in Colombia.
Okay.
What age did you come? I was like 7.
Okay.
I was 7. But the mentality kind of carried on when I went to the army. It wasn't that big of a difference, to be honest. Like, yeah, the physical demanding part was hard. And there was some barriers that I definitely had to break. But for the gist of it, I'm like, oh, my dad has put me through something like this, right?
Yeah.
I always made a joke that I joined the army to run away from home. it was the easier job, right? And I think those values kind of kept on even to life now where it's like, I find a lot of accomplishment in getting these things done. And I understand like, my mentality is there and it is the things that seem hard to other people seem just like everyday things like eating breakfast.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, it's just what has to be done.
But it's crazy. So if you kind of go back, cause that's pretty like life-changing scenario. You're 7 years old, you're in Colombia and then your family won the lottery.
Oh dude, it's even crazier. The story. It's even crazier because my mom, like from her side of the family, she had a kid at 16.
Okay.
And she like was very educated, like very smart, high IQ woman, very strong minded individual. And she was actually a lawyer in the Supreme Court in Canada in Colombia. Yeah. She was a Supreme Court lawyer. And the story goes, she was in the office when Pablo Escobar, I don't know if you ever seen Narcos. Have you ever seen that scene where they go into the Supreme Court and they blow it up?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get rid of the evidence.
Yeah.
That was my mom's office.
No way.
So my mom was pregnant with me and she wasn't able to go to the office that day because I kept kicking her bladder.
Holy shit. So she saved your mom's life technically.
Technically. Yes.
So she owes you forever.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's like,
holy shit.
Yeah. So that's kind of, and at the same time, my dad, because the family had come into money and my dad also became a lawyer, he was trying to fund small villages in Colombia, right? So he was like putting money into it to create jobs and an economy where farmers would have to sell their kids.
Whoa.
Right? So he tried to do that. And there was a rebellious like socialist group in Colombia called the FARC. Okay. So it's I don't know much about it because I don't know much about politics in Colombia, but essentially they were upset that my dad was creating that economy.
Yeah, so that's a whole economy for them.
Right. So one day we were driving on the highway, and I remember this very, very like explicitly. And we're driving on the highway, and a whole bunch of cars just come, and they circle the car.
Oh, man.
A whole bunch of gang members, people come out. My uncle was in the other, like, was in another car, and they just barely missed him. But we had a family member who was kidnapped. Whole different story. So they...
That day?
No, just previous to that. Holy so shit. They surrounded the car. They broke all the windows down. They put a gun to my dad's head. I remember it like it was like my first memory, right? Holy I get dragged shit. Out. They line us all up, put a gun to my dad's head. And they said, if you don't leave like the country, we're going to kill your whole family.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to get out. And that's why I'm in Canada.
Holy
that's the story
fuck.
Behind it. So my parents had to come here unexpectedly, do the whole process, do the whole grind. They lost all the money.
I was going to say, I'm sure it was a little difficult to remove that out of the country.
Yeah. So they lost the money because of the kidnapping. They had to pay the ransom, right? So they had to get rid of all the money. And then when they came to Canada, they had no transferable skills because they didn't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be a lawyer.
You'd have to go back to school.
Back to school to be a lawyer. They basically were washing dishes or washing toilets. They were working in a hotel,
Holy
right?
Fuck.
So I saw that grind mentality from them when they were young, like when I was like, you know, coming into age. And it was very different from the first 7 years when I lived in Colombia, where I had maids and nannies raising me essentially because my parents were busy at work.
Wow.
So the mentality completely switched. There's like the reality switched. I had to learn English. I had to figure some stuff out. And my parents didn't have enough time to seek asylum in the States or Canada. Like they actually came here on like a visiting visa. So they were illegal immigrants in the States. They couldn't even get a job.
Oh my God. So did you move to the States first?
Yeah, we moved to the States first because like my parents were like, oh, we need to get out of here and we don't have time to seek out asylum. Eventually Canada accepted us as refugees.
Oh my God.
So during that process, my dad was like, well, if you can't get a formal job, you need to become either an athlete or you need to do something like extraordinary for you to be able to have the same opportunities that you would have had in Colombia. So he kind of just like, he's like, I'm going to make you like a very strong person because you're going to have to endure hardships, right? And that kind of upbringing was great. But the problem is as a kid, you always rebel. So eventually I did rebel and I became kind of complacent. I was like, I don't want to do these things. I don't want to do this. But that was later on.
The opposite? Like it almost triggered the opposite effect from going to like always grinding and getting the work done to I just need a break, man. I need a vacation.
Yeah. So I think that came around like when I was just like leaving like the last 2 years of the army. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know what I want to do in my life. I hate this. And now I have a lot of appreciation for my dad and the values and all this stuff is coming back. Yeah. So I had a little bit of a stagnation period and now I can see my life changing and I can see a lot of things that have come as a result of that.
And Dave, like that's fucking intense, man. Like honestly, I didn't see that coming. Like this is obviously brand new. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, how did like when you look back now at those moments are like to me it sound like extremely traumatic and you don't give off this idea that there's even been that sort of type of trauma in your life. So I'm not saying this is a therapy session, but how did you deal with that? And how did you move past that though? Because that's a heavy fucking story. One inch of that story of being surrounded by the cars is already a traumatic experience that most people have never felt.
Yeah.
And you know, we would be lingering in their mind for decades. You have like in that one story, like 10. Mm. So how the hell are you, how did you cope with that? How did you move forward with that and build off that?
Can I go to the bathroom and then I'll answer that? My fat dude, I had to fuck that up, but I just drank a lot of water.
Is you it just
cool?
Drank?
Yeah, is it cool? Oh
we'll do a techno, we'll do a do, 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 do. So we're back.
Okay.
How did you deal with all of that stuff?
the trauma.
Yeah, like, dude, there was so much happening in just the first 7 years of your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, after speaking with you, I would never have even assumed you had even been through any of something like that in your life.
Yeah. I had no idea it was like a trauma thing. Like, it didn't come into my head at all. I once spoke to someone who was a trained professional.
Yeah.
I didn't go seeking therapy. We're very, like, you know, Latin American mentality. Yeah. Like, I've called my mom once. I'm like, hey, mom, I'm struggling with this. I might have depression. My mom was like, you live in Canada. And she kind of laughed and hung up the phone. Right? Like, that's the mentality that I was growing up with. So I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I think it kind of manifested itself in other ways. Maybe endurance, like that whole part of it. But I never saw it as like me being a victim or a trauma. I just saw it, the circumstance of the reality of life.
Yeah.
Something that's really helped in like just being peaceful and just being happy and just being is like I developed a really strong relationship with God. Like that is a very big thing for me. Like it's been like 2 years where I had been in a relationship for 4 years. I saw a lot of flaws in my game during that time period. And it was like, you know, I had the money, like, cause I was working, you know, the army, I was making a good income. I had a lot of things that were kind of going my way and on paper it looked like everything was great.
Yeah.
But it was like, I had a weird like porn addiction. I had all these different things. I'm going everywhere right now, but it's like, hey,
that's the whole point.
It's like, you know, it's like you have these issues and it's like there's something that's wrong here. Mm-hmm. Like something's not clicking, right? And I have always kind of had that awareness, maybe because I come from a different culture and a different society and a different upbringing and everything. Also, I've been kind of critical of this is where my life is at in relation to the world. And then, so I felt off. And I had a conversation with my then girlfriend and I said to her, like, look, I want to abstain from sex. I want to abstain from like a lot of things because I need to figure this out first, right? Like there's no way I should be like having a conversation with the girl and being a little bit perverse, like you're having those thoughts, right? There's something off. And I was like, I think I've always heard the concept of God, like a thing.
Yeah.
And I understood the underlying principles. I'm like, you know what? Like I kind of want to dive into that.
Yeah.
And everybody thought I was crazy. Fuck it, I run, you know, marathons and Ironmans. I don't care. I'm used to it. Like I'm kind of the outlier in a lot of things. So I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So like I went to a Catholic church. I spoke with some peers that were in there and I was like, hey, like, what is this about? And they're like, oh, dude, like let me kind of break it down for you. These are the kind of underlying values that God teaches. Have you considered reading the Bible? I'm like, it's what, yeah. You know. So I actually read through it. Like I read through some parts. I'm like, whoa. I relate myself to this character. I relate to this, like, Solomon, Peter, Simon, all these different characters within the Bible. It's like, oh, wow. Like, these are men that are struggling with the exact same thing that I'm struggling with. And I found a lot of connection through that. And being in that society and being around it is such a counterculture to what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
That I saw a lot of value in it. Not saying that society is wrong or it's negative.
Yeah, it's just different.
It's just completely different. And I saw people that had peace. And I was like, I saw people that came from trauma or thing. And I was like, huh. So I just started kind of going into it, going through the motions, like praying, you know, doing these things, half believing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it was just, people just come up to me and be like, David, why are you so calm? Why are you so peaceful? I'm like, oh, this is actually having an impact on me. So I'd invest more. And I would invest more and I'd go to church every Sunday. Like now I don't do training on Sundays.
Okay. You really take it off.
Like I take it off. It's like my Sabbath, right? And there's a saying, it's like, whatever God takes away from you, God will provide you something better. So I left that relationship. I left a lot of things. Like I kind of left a lot of things in the past. And God's just been blessing me. Like it's just been like, I don't have to put in effort.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like the coaching.
You've stopped thinking about it.
Yeah. Like, you know what? I'll tell you something crazy. I've gone 8 months without watching porn or having to even masturbate.
Wow.
Yeah. Like in today's world, it's nuts, right? And you have girls coming into your life that maybe aren't of the same faith or like, if I have a relationship with these girls, there's no way that I'm going to be able to maintain my relationship with God because they have completely different values, right? So I'm like, when those girls come in, I have the ability to be like, no, Like, yeah. I'm okay. Like, even though I find you extremely attractive.
But so it's interesting because I think, you know, there's that element of you feel fulfilled right now from that. And I think people have a hard time understanding that because there's a lack of fulfillment in so many areas. Yeah. So it's always constantly like grabbing stuff.
I've tried everything.
Yeah. You know, it makes sense though. It's when you start feeling that you've tried everything, why not try this?
Yeah.
It becomes like, why not? There has to be something there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, people have been doing it for 2,000 years, 3,000 years. There has to be something to it, right? And like in the complete despair that people have lived in before, being peasants or whatever, there has to be some sort of something to it. And I thought it was complete BS.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no, there's actually something here, right? And it's just become part of my identity and it's kind of made the decisions for me so I don't have to do it myself.
So you were saying a crazy story. What happened? What was the crazy story?
What do you mean?
You said something crazy happened, my coach, or was this something else? Or that was the story with the girls at that point, like, because you were saying something crazy happened because we were talking about like things are starting to come to you.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean like the whole coaching, like, like where I coach people at McGill or I coach people at just outside of it. It's like, I don't necessarily have to advertise myself. I don't have to do anything. People are just like, hey, like, I heard you're this. I heard you're a person of maybe values or these things that come as a result of it. Maybe you're extremely friendly. Or like, I go talk to someone, even if it's at the store or whatever. And it's just like, whoa, like, people have been coming without me having to. And it's when I was in a situation where I was heartbroken after the relationship, I don't want to work.
Yeah.
But work was provided for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
to kind of help you through it.
Like, I had 60 people in a span of like 3 weeks. They're like, I need help. I need help with a marathon. I need help. I'm like, to me, that's a blessing.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, right now I'm speaking with a girl from a different, completely different world. She's from, you know, Lebanon, different mentality. We might have to cut this one out, but no, it's okay. But it's like, no, but like I'm speaking to her and seeing how she values a relationship is completely different than what I previously had.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's like, hey, I want to sign up for a half marathon. I want to know what the process of what you're doing is like so I can empathize for you and be there for you when you do the things. I'm like, this is madness.
Yeah, that's something different.
Right? She's never had sex with anybody, complete virgin, Christian values. She's like, hey, like, I'm willing to wait for marriage. Are you willing to wait? I'm like, yeah. Like, it's kind of where I'm at in the like life. It's a different world.
And so, you know, you were talking about when you were younger, there was that, then there was the army and all this stuff. And all those other avenues had always felt like what, like a dead end at a certain point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've tried like, you know, it's like, I had sponsorships at a certain point where people would give me stuff, like material things that I would always be like, oh, like I want this. I want the latest. I don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. People are like, oh, like they pay $200, $300 to go pair, like jumping off planes. I've done that. I don't care. Like, it doesn't amuse me the same way. You think of like, oh, like I'd love to, you know, have sex with this beautiful woman. It's like, once you have them, like one, you have them all kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't fulfill me the same way that something that's been just traditionally like within us has fulfilled me, which is God. And the belief in that and having to kind of sacrifice myself in the process of pursuing becoming a righteous person. Like, that to me has been a crazy process.
I was going to say, because when you think of that, it's like it's a whole journey on its own.
Yeah.
And it's a journey you started, what, in the last 2 years?
Yeah, in the last 2 years. And I'm telling you, it's just drastically, like, it's been part of my identity. I'm willing to compromise other parts of my identity just to be able to
like what,
sustain that.
Like what has been compromised up to now and that you recognize was, you know, fuck it. I don't need this anymore. I realized that I don't need this anymore.
Well, porn, lust, right? That's one. Like I was having a conversation with someone the other day. It's like, if triathlon was taken away from you, running was taken away, how would you feel? I'm fine.
Oh yeah.
Like I'm good. Like I'm, see, that's I'm crazy good.
Because I know you train so much.
Yeah.
And it's so part of like when I thought of you the first time, like it was like David is a fucking ultra marathon runner.
Yeah.
You know, like it's part of the identity.
Yeah.
And for you to be that open with losing you, not, I don't, you're not saying I'm inviting it, but if it would come that you feel like you're grounded enough that you could move forward from that, that's pretty fucking big.
If I've got, I'm good. That's it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like if I end up like, you know, when I see nuns, when I see monks, people like that, I get it. I get it. Like, they just deprive themselves of everything to have a relationship with. I get it. Like, it's such a weird concept to me, but I get it. I get it now. So it's like, if you take last year, I was injured. I was sick. I had COVID multiple times. I couldn't regularly train, right? And I had weeks at a time where I did nothing. And the first couple of weeks, I'm like, God, why are you doing this to me? Mm-hmm. It's like, and then I started to look at it another way, because there's a lot of scripture talking about, like, you know, if you endure, your faith will grow stronger. You'll grow stronger as a man. You will enjoy the tribulations. Enjoy it. Don't look at it as a negative thing. And I just started to look at it as a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I don't need this. I don't need these different things, right? It's like, all I just need is just to develop myself, and everything that comes in my way, whether it's negative or positive, is an enhancement.
Exactly. I think I remember someone or reading something along the lines that, you know, each experience, we say, oh, it was a bad experience, it was a good experience. No, they're just an experience. And it's just part of the process, like, yep, to move forward. Like, you have to go through, you're not always going to be in a good state.
Yeah.
The bad state is usually where you tend to learn the most.
Yeah.
The good one is where you kind of learn the least, if anything.
Sometimes I get upset. Sometimes I get upset when I'm in a good position.
Yeah.
Like what? Like I'm like, I've been like, things are too good for me.
You see, it's something, I guess, similar. It's not upset. There's a part of me that's waiting for, like, the hammer to drop sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit's been good for a bit too long.
Yeah.
What's going to come my way?
Yeah.
Because something's coming. Like, yeah. it there's always, like, I find when you're healthy, your family's doing well, if you're in a good relationship, job is going well, I'm like, okay, something's got to switch, because there's got to be something that's going to kind of take you off course, yeah, right now. Because it's something that you don't even know it's coming yet.
I think a lot of people in the world today create problems for them to have that resistance. Like, we need resistance in, mm-hmm, our lives. And I think being in a lot of things that are very unpredictable, there's a lot of resistance in my life, which I really enjoy.
Is that from, like, army days? Is that from training? Do you feel like that really started in sports and in the army?
Yeah.
That mentality?
Yeah, like, you have to like, find joy in the resistance of things.
Why did you join the army in the first place? You were saying...
I didn't speak French.
Oh, you didn't speak French?
I didn't speak French, and I moved to... my dad, when I was 18, I had a little bit of a time. Like, I have moments of complacency. When I was 18, I kind of just started slack off a bit.
Like what? What were you doing?
Oh, like drugs and girls, okay, and you know, whatever. And my dad's like, at 18, like, you're out of the house. Like, as soon as you graduate high school in Ontario, you're out of the house.
So you were in Ontario?
I was in Ontario.
Okay.
They're like, as soon as you graduate, you're out of the house. So I had no idea what I was doing. And my dad's like, okay, we're going to Formula One in Montreal.
And I'm leaving you there. See you later.
No, and this is what happened. So he thought I would come back and go to school in London. Like, I had signed up to go to Western,
okay,
the Western University. And I showed up to Montreal. We watched the race. And I was like, I love this place. There's something about this place.
Okay.
Full circle. I went into a church.
Get the fuck out of here.
I went into a church and I said... I ran away. Sorry. I ran away from the place that we were at. I stayed the night on the streets. I was like, this is like, social, like, I need to figure this out. How do I stay here? I had maybe $300 because I was dishwashing at the time. I went into a church and I said, like, I was crying. I was like young. I was like, you know, 17, 18. But I was like, my dad's going to beat the shit out of me. Like, you know, it's, yeah, like, whatever. Like, something's, yeah, like, so I went into the church and a man came in and I told him, I'm like, hey, this is my situation. He goes, we have a room for $250 upstairs. Would you like to live in a church? So I lived in the church for 6 months.
Get the fuck out of here.
The church is located on Rue Ontario, just off of the Jacques Cartier Bridge. I still run, okay, it past the, all the time. And I lived there for 6 months, got into McGill, and have been here kind of since. Went back to Ontario a bit, but that's kind of like...
Dude, every time we keep talking, there's another layer of insanity that comes. Not, it's just like, holy fuck. So you lived in the church for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then from there, you decided to go into McGill, into history and French. I think you're the...
But I didn't care about what I was studying, because I was just doing it because I was like, I'm going to join the army. I love this. This is up my alley. This is the life that I want to live. And that's that.
And then, so what, you were 18, 19?
Yeah.
And so then you joined the army at what age?
I was 18, 19.
Okay, right away.
Right away. I was dishwasher for like 2 months. I'm like, this is silly. Like, I need to do something more stimulating. The Army provided that for sure. It taught me a lot of things. I loved it.
What's an Army experience like really like though?
So the problem,
because you see all this shit in movies, like I don't know anything about what the whole experience is like. I was a musician smoking weed the whole time, like that period. Yeah. So I never even thought of the Army in my mind.
Yeah.
So the process of making the decision to go into the Army was what, like you were like, I'm going to do this, because you could have went into sports, let's say as an example, versus the Army. So why the Army?
Well, the thing that's like, that's very captivating about the Army and why I find it to be a favorable experience, even if I remind it now, the moment it sucked.
Yeah.
But it's a bunch of men. Bunch of men with egos trying to one-up each other, right?
That sounds like
power tripping. Power tripping, master corporal, sergeants. I mean, I don't want to shit on the Army because I don't want to get in trouble. But it's like, you know, it's like there's that dynamic. And then you go in. And you go on courses, you go on field courses. So you go away for 7 weeks, 8 weeks, 9 weeks. You know, you go from Montreal into Farnham in the middle of nowhere, Valcartier, whatever. Yeah. And you stay in these barracks, but at the same time, you sleep maybe 2-3 hours a night.
So they're slowly fucking with
you. They're just slowly fucking with you, right? They put...
See when you break.
They put like bomb simulators, like the artillery simulators, they call them RD Sims. Okay. They put them in your room and you just freak out, or they gas you in the middle of the night.
Holy shit.
Like they'll throw tear gas and then you're like, gas, gas, gas. And you put your mask on and you, phenomenal experience. I'm not like, during the time it sucked, but I really enjoyed it. Like it's the brotherhood that you build with the guys that are suffering with you is hilarious.
Yeah.
Right. Like I still talk to some guys and we start laughing about how one unprofessional we were and all these different things that we had in the, you know, we always laugh about potentially burning down a tent. Like we were just that inept and just shitty at what we were doing. And these corporals that were outside of it were absolute sweethearts, great guys, great dudes. I've talked to them. I've talked to some of them.
But in the process,
they just drill you down. Like, you know, like I remember I was crying at a certain, like I was crying my head. Oh, a bunch of dudes, I'm not going to cry in front of them, right? And they just don't care. And they just keep drilling you. And, you know, I'm a small guy. They're carrying rucksacks that are 90 pounds for 15K hikes with machine guns. And
that's fucking crazy, dude.
And, like, you know, I've seen guys pass out standing up. I've seen guys pass out in porta potties, trench foot, broken bones, people crashing into buildings, jumping out of a plane, which is hilarious.
That's crazy, dude.
And, like, you know, it's just a lot of, like, accumulated things where you just kind of giggle. And you get a good laugh after.
That's why I said when I met you, I said, this guy's a fucking psychopath. Yeah.
But it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I have to run 20K or I might have to struggle today or I might have to do a 3-hour ride in the rain. But it's like, but I get to go home.
Yeah.
I get to sleep in a bed. That wasn't the case before. So it's like, it's just perspective, right?
So do you feel like when you walked in there at like 18 years old, that completely has changed your whole mindset in the sense of like, this is painful, but I appreciate that my day is going to end in a nice bed. I'm grateful for what I have. Like, did the Army change that? Or would you say the last 2 years has changed that?
Well, the bed part was the Army. Yeah. The gratitude for everything else in life has been the last 2 years. I would get very upset when things went wrong, when things didn't go to my plan. I would be very type A, like, I need to have life this way. I need to do this. Like, once I left the Army, I'm like, oh, I'm going to make all this money in the world. I'm going to do this.
What was the trajectory when you got out of the Army? What was your thought process?
Well, it kind of is, but it's been delayed a lot. I was like, I'm going to do an MBA. Okay. I'm going to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. But it's like, I saw a meme yesterday. It's like when you tell God your problems or your plan and God's just laughing. Like he's laughing because he's just going to get taken anywhere, right? It's just like you could be here. There's been multiple times where I'm like, I'm going to marry this person. This is going to be this is where I'm going to be with my life.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because like I was married once in my life. And when you think about it, like that day that you get married, you would never think you're going to be divorced.
Yeah.
You would never think that. It's just not part of the plan, right? If you're walking on the altar and you're thinking about a divorce, clearly you shouldn't be on that altar.
Yeah.
So you always think of these plans and you always think of these things that are going to come and happen and but fuck, life can just change so instantly that your whole plan is out the window right now.
I work hard. I do what I have to do. I get blessings here and there. I take them. I put myself out there and things happen, and I haven't really had to put too much effort into it. It's like, I don't worry.
I'm starting to fall into that phase too.
Yeah.
Where before I used to say, it needs to get done. This needs to get done by this time. This is what I'm going to do. And if I don't do it, you failed. It was like such a pessimistic way of working.
Yeah.
Where it was only failure unless it was this.
Yeah.
Whereas now I kind of have a vision of where I want things to go.
Yeah.
Like, this is the path that I want to take.
Yeah.
But I know the end result is blurry. Yeah. Because I can't really see it yet, because I don't understand it fully.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
So how can I know what the end result is when I'm just starting this new thing?
Right.
And so I kind of just immerse myself into it.
Yeah.
And say, if I do the right things, and if I, you know, if I'm working at this every single day, and I'm getting better at this craft, and whatever it is, XYZ, whatever I'm working on, it'll get there. It'll get there how it gets there, and stop forcing it. And things will start coming. And then it's true. It's like everything just starts showing up at your door, because you're kind of just focused on doing it well versus the outcome of it.
Yeah. And your basic needs will be met. I'm 100% sure that, like, you know, call it God, whatever people want to believe. It's like it's looking out for us. Like, if you're not complacent and you're grateful and you do well in the world too, like you when you interact with people. Something I've learned a lot recently is, like, not talking bad about other people.
I know.
Or when people are talking bad amongst people, it's like coming into a conversation, be like, hey, that's my friend, or hey, I don't like that. Let's do something else. Right. It's like, so I think if you act in a positive manner, then, you know, things will eventually, like, you will be blessed in its own way.
I agree. Like, I find more, like, even when I'm frustrated at work, or frustrated on a project, or I'm pissed, and it's normal. You lose your cool. But one thing that I've learned is I try not to lose my cool as much anymore. Like, I really try not to.
Yeah.
Sometimes I still lose it, whatever. But when I do, I really try to, like, reflect after and say, like, why did I really get mad? Like, what was I really mad at? What, I know it wasn't that, because that's kind of like the thing. That's the outcome. That was the end result of something else that was built. So I tend to look and ask myself, okay, like, what happened today? You know, fuck, I kind of woke up shitty, you know, in a shitty state of mind. Okay, well, why did I wake up shitty? Well, I went to bed really late last night.
Yeah.
Okay, I smoked a joint. Last thing, I shouldn't have smoked right before going to bed. I was, you know, you don't go to bed feeling well. Okay, but why did I smoke a joint? Oh, I smoked a joint because I was fucking frustrated at this and that. Okay, why did that? And then I started realizing that, like, okay, it pinpointed to that. I kind of do, like, it doesn't take that long. It's like a span of a 2-minute thought process to just sit back and relax and say, like, let me assess what the fuck just happened. And every time I do that, and I just realize, okay, that's the issue. When that happens again, try not to let it bother you that much.
Yeah.
You know, and then, okay, but move on now.
Yeah.
You got it. Like, I can't go back to yesterday and take back what I said or how I acted. It's over. Fuck it. Move on.
Yeah.
But when that comes, now that you kind of did this exercise to understand it, just try to reflect on it a bit better, or try to react to it in a better way, you know? Yeah, yeah. So I feel like that's only come in the last 2-3 years.
Right.
Because when I think of how I used to react, like, fucking so emotional all the time, like, you go ups and downs, something comes up and it just takes you off your track. Yeah, and
a man who can't control his emotions, like, is in deep trouble, like, big time. You know, like, I always had a, it's funny because, like, I have conversations with girls now where I might be having a day and I tell them, like, this is what's going on. They're like, why don't you cry about it? I'm like, no. Wait a minute. I'm checking my emotions. Like, I'm just saying these things, but I'm not going to react. If I'm being overwhelmed by something, I will go for a run. Yeah. I'll come back and I'll think and I'll come back and I'll talk to that person and be like, hey, this was what bothered me. And I come from a more, I want to say, even masculine frame of mind, where I come in and I'm like, I'm not emotional, and we'll have a discussion on a matter. But I'm never going to react right away. It's just, I'll rather bite my tongue 100%.
Yeah.
My mom definitely instilled that in my head.
Well, I know, like, coming from Italian background, right? It was always so emotional.
Yeah.
Something happens, fuck.
Yeah.
Just start getting mad and screaming at everything. And now I realize, like, that is probably the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
to just react instantly, to just react instantly is never really even the emotion you want to have 100%. In the end. It's just you're an animal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Something happens mm-hmm. to you. You react. It's normal. Fight or flight, you know, like very prehistoric way in the sense of how you would react. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's how you would really do it if you had the time to think about it. So that's why whenever I see that it gets very emotional, anger, whatever the story is, I kind of start telling myself, I think you need to walk away a bit. You need to walk away. You're too close to this conversation.
Yeah.
You're a bit too involved right now. And you shouldn't be this involved. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
Step the fuck back. Like, relax, man.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's with anything that you can't control or anything for that matter. It's like, for me, it's different because I just lay my worries to God. Like, I pray about it. I'm like, hey, dude, like, you do what you got to do. Two outcomes, I will be gracious or grateful despite whatever outcome it is. It's on you, man. Like, it's beyond me.
It's funny you say it like that because a lot of people, the way they look at it is, I want my life in my hands.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's an element of control in that.
Yeah.
But for you actually giving up that control on it.
Oh, dude, I'm all about surrendering. Like, to me, it's like, it's not about me. Like, I could care less, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, something that's related back to running, like Strava, right? People,
the app, right?
The app. Like, I have a lot of followers. People give me attention. And I don't post on it. I don't want to get that thing because it isn't me. Like, I want to detach myself from the positive or the good. I'm just neutral. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to know me. I don't want notoriety. I just want to be, like I said, it's just my only priority is just with God. It's just that's it. Everything else is irrelevant to me. Like, it's just like,
Do you find that frustrating at times?
Like, I don't care.
No, like, it doesn't, but like, because we're always so surrounded by wanting notoriety. Our whole world now is based on trying to create some sort of notoriety. And you're going in an opposite direction. So at times, do you feel like frustrated with that and then you kind of let it go? Or it doesn't even come into your mind anymore?
When I talk, let's relate to running. When I talk to people about running and people come up to me and be like, hey, I'm running my first marathon.
Yeah, check. I was that guy.
I'm more eager to hear about you, right? I want to know, like, I'm like, oh, wow, like, you're coming from this place. I might have done the same process 20, 30 times, or I might have done it a lot differently, or have gone through the or are more of a veteran in the game or faster or whatever, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm more drawn into you. It's not about me. I'm not here to tell you how fast I run or what I do or Ironman. It just kind of comes up. Yeah. And maybe sometimes when I go into a social setting and my friends know, or someone that's there knows me, and no one else knows me, and I sit down at a table where nobody else knows me, and my friend comes in and goes, do you know who you're, like, this guy that you're talking with does the X, Y, Z, blah, 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 has had these experiences in life? And I'm like, yeah, but I want to know about you. Like, mm-hmm. It's not about, I don't care. I'm not here to boost my ego. Because I think the lack of humility definitely detaches us from a lot of wonderful things in life.
Well, it's true. Because I remember when I walked into the store and I didn't know anything. Like, I was a fucking dummy, like, when it came to running. I just had an old pair of running shoes. I'm like, who gives a shit? You just run. And then you run for a longer period of time. And if you train enough, you'll be able to do it. Like, in my mind. Clearly, I didn't research. I didn't do anything. And then I remember walking into the store one day when my knees were starting to hurt.
Yeah.
Because it was hitting that, like, 19 kilometers or whatever. Yeah. And it was like, man, these shoes, like, I'm feeling it in my feet. My feet are in pain. I'm like, I cannot believe that this is how it should be. Like, something is wrong here. And I remember coming into the store and then we were talking about shoes and all this stuff. And fuck, I was like, this guy's taking so much of his time.
Yeah.
To talk about the shoes. Like, I saw one, how passionate you were just about the sport itself. Like, I saw that you're not a guy that just runs, like, you're a runner.
Yeah.
And then you're taking the time. Then every time I would come in, you're like, hey, Steph, what's up? You know, did you try this? And then you would ask me questions, like the follow-ups. And I was like, yo, this guy gives a fuck. He actually cares.
Yeah.
And it was something you don't see. And even for me, it struck me because I was like, there's no other store I want to go to.
Yeah.
This is the only store I want to go to. And not for the store. It's for David. I want to go, like,
yeah.
give them a heads up, like, oh, I hit the 30 mark.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, I remember that one time we ran into each other in the canal. Yeah. I was actually on my way to church. I was running late. So I was like, fuck. But I remember seeing, like, I remember, like, biking to the thing. I'm like, oh, like, he's still about it. And he's finding, he might be into his 30K or whatever, along into his run. But he finds the same joy that I find in running. And I think sharing that joy with people is really cool.
Yeah.
Because it's such a process. Like, people hate running. They might, like, they despise it. And then it's like, I'm becoming more efficient. I'm hitting that 30K mark. This is amazing. I feel great. Like, you know, it's like.
It's the worst sport
and
the best sport at the same time. Like, it gives you nothing if you don't put anything into it.
Yeah.
But when you put into it, you know, people will think mainly it's, oh, okay, you know, oh, you physically feel better. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
But mentally, every run is a therapy session of just like any problem you had or any problem I would ever have, I would just say, you know what? Okay, I'm going for the run because I'm training for it. But I'm actually going for the run to just forget about this right now.
Yeah.
And like think it through and how I really feel. And throughout the run, over the next 20 kilometers, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I know I'll figure it out. I don't even really need to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Because I know the answer already. I just got to run it out.
Oh, it's a great sport.
It's really fun and it's super painful at times. And like, but I remember there was moments when you hit like that 20 mark the first time or the 21, like the half one. And I was like, oh my God, I just ran a fucking half marathon.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like, and this is not the half marathon. I just ran it because it's Sunday. It's my long run.
Yeah.
You know? And then I would be like, okay, next week when I'm coming to the store, like, yo, Dave, I hit a fucking wall at this point. Like, this hit. And then you'd be like, okay, try this stuff. And then during the run itself, like the marathon itself, like I had injured my leg at the 34th or 35th kilometer. I'd never passed 35.
Okay.
And I injured my leg. I had this hurting. Crazy cramp, honestly, that like knocked me on the floor.
Yeah.
And my body was going into like shock.
Yeah.
My leg was just shaking. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And I had literally, excuse me, I had your voice in my mind. Electrolytes. You know, I was like thinking all these things about the nutrition because you would constantly talk about it. And I was like, okay, I remember Dave's sodium block. So I had the fucking Cliff block. Dude, I ripped a block. I took electrolytes. I was like, I need to get my body to like come back. And then I could do the next steps after, you know? But it was your voice, dude. Literally, that's what I'm telling you. It was like all those conversations every single week leading up to it. It was like, dude, had I not had those conversations with you, I would have probably never made it to the 35th kilometer in my trainings.
Yeah.
Or it would have been really painful and hurting.
Yeah.
And I would have never got through that 35th like roadblock that was probably the most physical painful that I've been through, mentally challenging and emotionally like everywhere in a span of like 10 minutes. It was all coming like, I'm not going to be able to finish this race. I trained this whole fucking time for it. Like, you know, it's like, and then, okay, take a step back. It's going to happen. You just got to relax, take a deep breath. You know, it's like all these things happen in that moment. Stay calm.
Yeah.
Stay calm. Yeah. Like it's going to happen and it's not going to end this way.
Yeah.
Like I had a belief in just, I guess, in myself and the work that had been done. I remember I was thinking of my daughter. I said, no. Because this is why I was running it. I was like, this is why you're doing it. It's bigger than you. It's more important.
Yeah.
Do all this shit.
Yeah.
And then finally, but I swear, like just in that moment, I heard your fucking point. I said, this motherfucker told me to take some fucking sodium at one point in my life. I need some fucking sodium in my life. I need some electrolytes.
Yeah, and
dude, all those conversations, that's why I was like, I got to get this guy on the show because you were so nice to me. You helped me out so much. And I was like, you would tell me these stories. I heard Paratrooper once. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Like you were saying, like you really did feel like, to me, it really felt like you cared about
me
making this marathon.
Well, you'll never care about people unless you go through pain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When it's, you develop empathy through heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having all that pain throughout everything in life kind of brings you to the realization that person might be going through the same thing.
That it's funny you say that. When I was younger, I really didn't think about these things.
Yeah.
I really had a very selfish point of view.
Yeah.
Of like life.
Yeah.
You know, how hard can it be or all this stuff. And then like just in the span of the first like 20 minutes of our conversation, yo, that's like a pretty intense first 7 years
yeah.
of someone's life. And then there's the rest. Like, you know, like the hard part is like coming in of growing up and also yeah. like understanding emotions and relationships. And,
yeah.
But there was that fucking foundational piece at 7 years old that most people don't go through.
Yep.
And so when you listen to stories like that, you do recognize like, oh yeah, my parents, they had a tough life coming here, whatever, all that stuff. But they really, I didn't experience anything like that. So I can't understand how that can impact someone. Or the army, I don't know yeah. how that can impact someone like yeah, you were talking yeah. about earlier.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, that had a really hard time when they got out of that.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't think of these things. And the more you, I don't know, the older I'm getting, the more I'm realizing like, there's a lot of fucking stories out there.
Yeah. That- oh, 100%. You know, I live right next to a homeless shelter. I didn't, when I was there, it wasn't a homeless shelter when I first moved there.
What was it?
It's the Hotel Du.
Oh, yes.
So they made it into a homeless shelter, and just walking past it, I look at the people and I don't get upset because I have conversations with them. And I'm like, that could be me.
Yeah.
Right? Like that could easily be me, and I'm not disgusted by them. And I'll have conversations sometimes, you know, whatever, I'll offer something because that's easily me. Anybody that's in any position could just be, the mind is very vulnerable.
Yeah.
If the wrong, you know, hands are dealt to you, you could just easily end up there. It's just what it is. There's no reason to be holier than thou or better than you, or, you know, like I have this fancy thing and you don't. Nah, that's silly. Everybody's kind of on an equal playing ground.
Same here. I used to like, I remember even COVID, when COVID first hit, and that was a wake up call for me because I remember I was living downtown.
Yeah.
And the city was empty and the streets was just homeless people.
Yeah.
And you finally saw how many homeless people there were.
Oh, yeah.
It was like,
yeah,
it was like a movie because I couldn't believe it. Like, cause it was so busy every day where people were in suits going to their offices and everyone was just like, either their heads were in their phone and you know, their eyes were focused on that, or, you know, you're just late to a meeting or whatever the story may be, late to wherever you got to go. And he didn't realize that it was like a slew of people there just lying down on benches. And so when it was empty and there was no movement of people downtown, you were like, oh my God, this has been here the whole time. And I remember I would go with my girlfriend, we'd go like give sandwiches and stuff like that, because it was like, it was a wake up call to me of just, holy shit, how much homelessness there was in downtown Montreal.
And how many people are in the brink of that
as
well. Like how many people are struggling mentally to get, they're almost there.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a handful. So it's like, yeah, the world is an unstable place, you know, but you empathize because you don't know where people are at. I think that's kind of something I've learned throughout the struggles that I've had in life.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And so now you're training, you're doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Boston's, I know, the thing that's coming up now for you.
Yeah.
Why Boston?
It's been a dream.
Yeah.
Boston's always been a dream. Same with Kona, but lately I've realized that I have to go to the bathroom again.
Take two.
What's the question? Why Boston?
Boston, yeah.
Well, Boston's always been like the prolific marathon, right?
Why? Why is Boston? Like, I heard it's an insane race, but why is Boston such in high regards for runners?
I think it's because of the qualifying time, the course, the weather. It's downhill, first 10K. So you have to get used to it. I've had a lot of great runners that I've been friends with. They fail. They fail at kilometer 30. I think it's just the course, it just destroys your legs. You know, like when I was 19, I'll tell you this funny story. I got into doing ultramarathons way before ultramarathons were a thing. Like people didn't understand what an ultramarathon was. I think it's called the Canadian Death Race in Alberta.
Sounds inviting.
And I think there couldn't have been that many people signed up.
Yeah, when it's called Canadian Death Race, you know, back what? How old are you now?
28. So it was 19. Okay.
So about 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I remember doing the race, and it's 125K. You have three mountain peaks. So you're doing about 3,000, 4,000 meters of elevation. Holy I come shit. From London. It's flat. I've never done mountains in my life. Right. And I show up. I remember showing up to the gate, and there's this girl, she's this lady, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm doing the Canadian Death Race. And she bluntly looked at me in the face and she says, you're not going to do it. Like, you're not going to finish it. And it's not because I'm being pessimistic. It's just, you don't have, you're young.
Yeah.
And I remember doing it at, like, I was at 100, like kilometer 85.
The fact that you got to kilometer 85 is pretty insane.
I started experiencing kidney failure.
Holy shit.
Like my body was like shut, like it was done. Like, and I remember the things that did it for me was my legs running downhill just were absolutely destroyed.
So the downhill is the killer?
The downhill is the killer. It's not the uphill.
Why?
Because you have to catch yourself every step.
So that, right? that impact every single time.
So I'd imagine Boston coming downhill for the first 10K or 15K or whatever it is, you're going to struggle. Like the latter part, right? We struggle as it is with flat half or flat marathons, yeah. Right? So I can't imagine, right? Like right now, some of the things that I'm doing are kilometer repeats downhill. So I run up Camilud.
Okay.
So my recovery is running up. And then I'm doing like 2 minute 50 per K downhill kilometers.
That's insane.
Like just basically sprinting it. And I'll do, it's been ranging, but my quantity has increased. So I'll do like a 25 kilometer workout on the, just running up and down the mountain.
Yeah, no, you were telling me about that once. I remember you telling me, you want to do a crazy workout?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, fuck you, dude. I'm not doing that. You're crazy.
So it's just the downhill that destroys you. And I'm trying to get my legs, I'm doing a lot of my easy runs in Westmount. Just getting my legs into adapting to up and down the hill for Boston.
And when is Boston again?
It's in April.
Okay.
But I'll tell you one thing. My life has so drastically changed in the last 2 months that I don't care.
Okay. I was going to say, because you were talking about this as it's a dream.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was going to ask, does it still have the same meaning now that you've kind of surrendered?
Yeah.
Like, does it still have the same meaning in one way from a nostalgic perspective of what Boston means? Or does Boston still hold that high regard? Or is it just another race?
Nothing. I don't care about like sports in general. Like, okay. I remember when
God, I wish I didn't care about sports and train as much as you did.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was like when I was in grade 11. So it's like, I can't remember. I watched a video of people doing Kona on YouTube. And I'm like, I want to do that one day. I'm going to do that one day. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was like my dream in the last like 5, 6 years or 4 years. I was working on it every day. And I know I can do it now. Like I'm very aware. Like I had a friend who qualified and I'm like, I'm faster than you. And we're the same age, or he's older than me. I'm like, I could get there. It's not a problem, but I just don't care. Mm-hmm. Like is it
kind of killing the process of training a bit?
No. Because it's I'm doing it for myself. I don't post on Strava. Mm-hmm. I'm literally doing it for myself. But I think it was kind of a compensation. Like it was like, I'm going to do these little things so I have that label so that I can get X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I just see it as like, I see it as masturbation essentially. Like I'm just like kind of pleasing myself. And I'm like, I know I'll do it. I won't be fulfilled. Like I think I'll do it and I'll be like, cool. Like I finished it. It's a hard thing. Life has a lot more hard things ahead of me. I'm not going to. Have you ever seen that interview of Kobe? Kobe Bryant, when they ask him, he's like, oh, you're up two games. Like you're up two games in the finals. He's like, why aren't you smiling?
He's like, because we still got two more games to win.
He's like, job's not finished. Why would I be happy, right? Like I might be ahead, but the job's not finished. I don't think anything until I'm dead, like the job's not finished.
Yeah.
Like I can't be complacent. Like it's just like, you might finish the stage, but something else is going to come into my life that's going to be hard.
It's funny you say, I relate to that so much.
Yeah.
Because even when something is completed, it's like, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I appreciate the work that was put in this.
Yeah.
But we got to move forward. Like what's the next thing? And not like, oh, what's the next thing? It's kind of like, I had such a limiting belief of myself.
Yeah.
So what other limiting beliefs have I set?
Yeah.
Like I know that's what running did for me. Mm-hmm. Like I thought this was impossible. And I think I've said this before in some of the episodes, like my demand at times for myself were so small.
Yeah.
I expected so little out of myself that I feel like it has created a confidence in me to say, no, you should be aiming for this because you know you could do this. Now it's because it's hard.
Yeah.
And actually what you enjoyed the most out about the running is when you were fucking dying and you thought you weren't going to be able to finish and you convinced yourself somehow to continue going and you made it. And that was the thing you liked the most out of the training.
It's honestly, it's the process.
Yeah.
Like the process is so beautiful. Like, man, if I could tell you when I'm doing like large Ironman blocks or marathon blocks where I'm training 20 hours a week and I'm training so much that my body's like, I'm starting to get emotional. Like my body's all messed up. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'll just sit there and I'll just start laughing. I'm like, this is hilarious. Yeah, like my body's
delirious.
Yeah. I'm like, my body's all messed up. I've done things like last year or 2 years ago, I did one summer. Sometimes I'll do crazy things, like very long crazy things. Yeah, like,
I feel like sometimes.
So I biked from here to Quebec City and then I did a little bit longer. So I did 300K.
You're a psychopath.
And I got out of the bike and I'm like, I'm going to run 25K.
You ran after the
Yeah, yeah. So my dad was alongside me.
Like your dad did the bike?
No. Okay. He was in the
Okay,
in
my car. Now I know where you get it.
Yeah, so my dad was in the car. And even my dad was like, what are you doing? I'm like, there's something so beautiful about this moment right now that I'm in that it's like a lot of humans will never experience it.
Yeah.
And like you see characters like Goggins, and I get what he's doing. But I also think Goggins is he's a broken human that just needs to find peace. Like he just overdoes it. Like, I mean, people glorify him and I, you know, all power to him. And I think he's great. But to me, it's like, I can run faster than him. Maybe I wouldn't suffer as much as he does because he's just got that callous thing. But to me, it's like, there's more to life than just hurting yourself. But anyways, yeah. In the moment, in the process of being in it, like there's just something so beautiful because it's like you go to hell, like yeah. You go, like I remember my dad looking at me about 200K into the bike ride and he gives me a pizza and he looks at me and he goes, your eyes are rolling to the back of your head right now. Like I'm like, this is the worst I've ever felt, dad. I'm gonna be honest with you, like I'm very, like I felt really bad.
Were you kind of scared at one point, like on the ride, like maybe I should stop?
No, because I know that how it works.
Okay.
Like I've had enough experience where it works. What scared me was when I was like kilometer 22 of the run and my heart rate was at 200 and I was felt fine.
Oh shit.
That's when I got scared.
Okay.
I was like, okay, this is might be sick. Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't like I was jogging the run either. I was hitting like 350s, man.
Holy shit.
Like I was booking it because I had just two pizzas on the thing. I had a whole bunch of candy, a bunch of sugars.
You're so mental, dude.
So I was like all lit and I'm like, this is such a beautiful like experience that I'm having. And it's like the fact that I'm able to do this and it's like a man thing. I really do think it's like a dude thing. Like if you really put yourself in the furnace and you suffer, especially if it's self-afflicted.
Dude, there's something so great about
it. Oh my gosh,
it's
man.
It's fucking crazy.
It's a high. It's yeah. A high and a half. You know, it's like, and so not that I want to, you know, there's other things that fulfill things, but I'm like, when I'm there, I'm like, this totally makes sense and I love it. And it makes sense what I'm doing. People might be looking at you. You know, I was covered in salt. My dad's like, this guy's nuts. I'm like, don't look at me. You're the one who created this. So yeah. It's like, don't shit on me.
You know the padding
now.
On the yeah. Fucking snow?
Yeah, that's, this, shit this, just this is how it now. Translates into that. I'm like, but this is beautiful. And it's not because I have trauma. It's not that. It's just the human experience.
There's something that I really enjoyed was just saying, holy fuck, I can't believe I'm still standing after this.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was impossible.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't come from a family of like athletes and all this yeah. Shit. And no one talks about running. Like yeah. Running was like run to the bathroom, if anything, but yeah. Nothing else. So that the whole idea of just even getting into this was so like alien to me.
Yeah.
And I think you noticed that from when I walked into the store of like yeah. How I was asking. I was like,
Well, everybody, a lot of people come in.
I didn't know like anything.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And then towards the end of it, it was becoming like, I had my shit ready in the morning. I remember my watch. I had my shoes yeah. Were prepped. I was in bed Saturday nights.
Yeah.
9, 10 o'clock, knowing I had my long runs on Sunday mornings. And I had trained all week for it. And I got ready for that Sunday morning. And if you would have asked me, do you want to be at a party? Do you want to be here? I didn't want to be anywhere else on Saturday nights, but in my fucking bed, sleeping by 10 p.m.
I get it.
And if somebody would have even said, oh, but have this crazy party. Nah, dude, I want that run to feel... I know it's going to be painful, but I want to feel good like walking into it.
Yeah.
Because I know it's going to get hard. That kilometer 26 yeah. Or whatever the story is going to be. And I want to run and I want to be good coming home.
Yeah.
Like I want to be happy. And I remember yeah. The first time like hitting certain kilometers And I would be like, I had to lie down after like at a park. I was like eating something. I'm going to die. But then towards the end, I was like bixing home after. And I was like, this is fucking great. I'm bike riding after a 31 kilometer.
Might have to sleep the rest of the day.
But I chill the fuck out. Yeah. But funny enough, like I wouldn't be dead the whole day. I would come home. I'd take a shower, chill out, take a nap of like an hour, come back, like let the legs rest. Like more of a calm day for sure.
Yeah.
But like I was doing shit in the house. I'd maybe go see somebody for a coffee, relax. But I never felt so satisfied.
Yeah.
Like on dude, those Sundays after the long runs.
And you're willing to sacrifice a lot of things. Like when I went into this Boston thing, I set three rules for myself. I said no alcohol, nothing. Like no substances. Not that I've ever had an issue with it. I think I've been sober for like 4 or 5 years, where I've just been dry after the army. So no alcohol. No girls who don't like. If I'm with a girl, she has to love God as much as I do. That's my number. That's my rule with girls. So two, that's my second rule. Third one is I have to be in bed by 9 p.m. And those are the three rules that I abide by for Boston. Like that's what I did and that's what I put my mind to it. And it isn't the sacrifice because at the end of the day, you're still getting the pleasure and the joy of the process itself. Yeah. It's such an awesome thing, man. Just making sacrifices for something.
I think that's the part that people confused with this is like they're like, oh, the sacrifices. They're sacrifices and they're also not.
They don't feel like it.
They don't feel like it. That's what I'm saying. Like I didn't feel like I was sacrificing my Saturday nights.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm gonna sacrifice I'm gonna compromise my Sunday if I fuck up my Saturday.
Yeah.
And that Sunday is meaning so much to me right now these days that I'm not fucking up that Saturday. Like I'm not fucking it up. So I remember when I used to be a huge smoker a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like 2 packs a day for 15 years.
Yeah.
Like crazy stuff. And I never believed in the cutting back.
Yeah.
I never believed in cutting back because what ended up happening is, I remember when I tried that once, I was like, I can't wait for that cigarette later. My one of three cigarettes, I'll be like, oh. And I was like, I'm actually idolizing the three that I have versus saying that I'm cutting back, where now all day I would be jonesing, thinking about those three cigarettes.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had to break it, right? Yeah. So when I stopped smoking, I literally stopped smoking January 7, 2011. I could still see it. And I just threw out that cigarette and said, I'm done. I'm never smoking again.
Yeah.
And I never smoked another cigarette. And it was like this accomplishment. Like, so people are like, was it hard? It actually wasn't hard at all.
Right.
I had made such a conscious decision to say that I am done smoking. Me and you, we are not friends anymore.
Yeah.
And that the sacrifice of the Saturday nights or the whatever the story is, like you were talking about, like doing these things, it sounds like you were going to go down that direction anyway. So is it hurting? Probably not as much for most people that have.
And it's a lot easier to make those jumps when you have a purpose as well. Like it's either the marathon or whatever it might be. I remember I did live a certain time period where I didn't have a purpose, where I was like gone from the army because some guy killed himself and I just happened to be in a tent. Whole different story. So they put us on like medical leave and I was just kind of like without a purpose. And I remember I was trying to find something in drugs. I was doing like DMT, like mushrooms and everything. And I remember how low I got in that moment because you didn't have that purpose or disciplined.
Yeah.
Right. So it's silly.
It's so true, man. When you don't have a reason for anything, you're looking for anything to find the reason.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're just constantly taking whatever someone's going to tell you. And really what I've started realizing is you need silence at that point.
Yeah.
And you need to just like hear your voice.
Yeah.
I find some of the things that I like doing a lot is time alone, like just time alone, even if it's spending like through the run or go for a drive of just take an hour for yourself and just think. No music. Don't like just hear your fucking voice.
Dude, I've gone weeks like that.
Dude, you need that. Like I'm leaving for California to do something like that of just go alone for a few days. And like, and I love my family, I love everything, but I'm just going to disappear. I'm going to Joshua Tree Desert, going to hang out there for a few days.
Yeah.
And just like, I'm not going there to party. I'm going there to really think and just like, I have the next decade. I just turned 40. Like,
What's going on next decade?
Yeah. Like what's my purpose for these next 10 years?
Yeah.
You know? And I want to think about those things. Like, before I, you know, when I was 20, I would think of those things in a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
But now it's like, money is money. Like, it'll come and it'll go. Like, you make more of it, you'll just spend more of it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of more the idea, like, what's the purpose? What kind of person do I want to be by the end of these 10 years? So that way I'll be a brand new person when I walk into my 50s, and hopefully I'm there. You know, I don't know. Well, you know, we always assume you'll be there, but you don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows, right? Who really knows? Like, I want to take that time to reflect on the first 40 of my life and, like, what's the next day going to look like? And hopefully what's the next 10 years going to look like, you know?
And definitely different stages, you'll prioritize different things more than others.
Big time.
Yeah.
Dude, David, this has just been an awesome conversation, man. Yeah, and I know we went a little over, but there's no time limit here. But dude, I knew there was going to be some good stories in here. I didn't realize that there would be that many. And I just want to say thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Talking about your story so openly.
Yeah.
Note to self, don't drink so much water for your next podcast if you ever do another one. And I was like, is he going to fucking run out for a third time here? But it was fucking great. It was such an awesome way to meet you.
Yeah.
Through the run and kind of growing that friendship over the last few months. And then now having you here, it meant a lot, man. I'm super happy. Yeah. And I can't thank you enough for all the help you gave me, all the stuff that, you know, this time you spent when I was training for the marathon. I can honestly tell you that I owe a lot of that to you.
Yeah.
And I fucking appreciate it. I'll never forget it.
Oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the acknowledgement. If you ever need anything else, just let me know.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
This is awesome. That was awesome. That was great.
Hey, thanks for checking out the show. It's been awesome working on this project. And if you like it, tell a friend. And if you want to support the show, you can by 1, subscribing and liking our YouTube channel at the DMW Podcast. 2, you can go to our website and sign up to our mailing list at thedmwpodcast.com. And 3, you can follow us on Instagram at the DMW Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support. My name is Steph, and this is the Dead Man Walking Podcast.